Welcome to Cynicism.
This week on Cynicism, we're going to talk about the blue blur, Sonic the Hedgehog.
And then we say buff hello to Buffalo.
I wouldn't screw you over. I'm a Bills fan.
All right, so welcome to Cynicism, Brian.
Welcome to Cynicism. I'm glad to be here.
I'm happy you're here. This week we are talking about two movies. Very different movies.
One's about a blue furry fast boy.
Yeah, and the other is about a city that worships a blue mascot idol.
And chicken wings.
There's two things we like, and those seem to be it.
And we affectionately refer to one of our beers as blue.
Yeah. And so all of that fits in with our whole blue furry fast boys theme. But we are broadcasting, if you didn't know, from Buffalo, New York. And we did think with us talking about the film Buffaloed this week, we wanted to shine a light on our city that, as it's been depicted in films before, because we're not a city that tends to get a lot of attention. We're a smaller city in the Northeast. Most people know us for Wings and for
the Buffalo Bills.
Or the Sabres if they're super Canadian. So we wanted to highlight the few times, though, that we have been on film, which is happening increasingly more. We just had Have a Quiet Place 2 coming up later this year. Which was shot here, and then we have Guillermo del Toro coming back for Nightmare Alley, and there's also that Billy Eichner film coming up that is being directed by Nicholas Stoller.
Billy on the Street?
Wait, no, have you not heard of this?
What? This Billy on the Street's gonna make a movie in Buffalo?
Yeah.
Yay!
Yeah, no, oh, okay, so I'm glad I get to tell you about this. So later this spring, they're shooting a new rom-com. It's like an LGBT rom-com starring Billy Eichner. It's being produced by Judd Apatow, but it's being directed by Nicholas Stoller, who did Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Ooh.
Which, that's my favorite of the Judd Apatow-produced movies.
I really like Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
It's a great movie. So, and that's kind of in its own way sort of a rom-com, so I'm very excited, and I love Billy Eichner, so I'm very excited to see what they do together, especially
being loads of fast talking and yelling and hating people.
Yeah, I'm here for all that, but let's talk Buffalo. Let's talk the city that we live in, the city that we love. What movies, Buffalo movies make you feel proud of Buffalo?
I mean, There's a lot of movies out there. I think some of the ones that a lot of people are familiar with. One example is Bruce Almighty, but I'm not going to talk about it. But there were some weirder movies that got filmed here. One example is a trauma film. If that rings any bells and you've ever heard of The Toxic Avenger, you'll know that the movie Poultrygeist was filmed here, the comedy horror film about undead chicken zombies. It was filmed on Bailey Avenue in an old McDonald's.
That sounds exactly like where a trauma film would be shot.
It's just as grotesque, if not one of the most grotesque trauma films I've seen. Just people exploding and shit bombs and like disgusting moments of like people with chicken decaying flesh on their own faces because they're eating contaminated chicken, or I think they were, oh, the McDonald's was built over an Indian burial ground.
So just like Poltergeist.
It's real messy. It's really insane. It's definitely not something I would recommend to everybody because it's so grotesque.
It's something that's very specific. You're either all in on this or will completely loathe it. There's not much middle ground.
Yeah, it's Lloyd Kaufman. He is just an insane director who thinks that, like, hey, if I'm getting a reaction, it's good filmmaking. Even if the reaction is puking.
And I think for me, that might be my reaction to some of them, but I definitely appreciate the ambition. I mean, Brian mentioned there's a lot of movies, or I don't want to say a lot, but there are some movies that you might more famously associate with Buffalo. I think probably the most famous one is Buffalo 66. The city's right there in the title of the film. And it is made by a hometown boy, Vincent Gallo. It did premiere at the Sundance Film Festival. It got great reviews. It was a pretty decent hit on the sort of indie market in the mid-90s. I think even after that, the film even went and played at Cannes as well. I'm not particularly a fan of that movie, which I know is almost blasphemy in my city. But fuck Vincent Gallo. but I did want to mention a couple other movies that have either been shot or take place in Buffalo. And I wanted to start it with a movie that takes place in Buffalo. Even if it's not shot here, but it's kind of weird that it is set here. And that is the 2001 animated film Osmosis Jones.
I totally forgot that this was supposed to be located in Buffalo, which means that the character that Bill Murray is playing works at the Buffalo Zoo?
The movie, I think if I remember the movie right, it has admittedly been a while since I watched it. I believe it starts in San Diego.
Okay.
And Bill Murray's dream vacation to kind of reunite with his daughter is that they're going to go to the Chicken Wing Festival in Buffalo, New York. And yeah, it's supposed to have kind of the reaction where you're grimacing right now.
Yeah, these Buffalo movies are really gross.
this is not her dream vacation, but... there are a lot of mentions of Buffalo in the film. There's a lot of the trip on their way to Buffalo. The most weird part about this movie in particular is that at the time of release, the Buffalo Chicken Wing Festival did not exist. And then years later, it suddenly did. So in a weird way, about Buffalo... manifested an actual Buffalo Chicken Wing Festival.
It should be called the Osmosis Jones Chicken Wing Festival.
Well, I will say I did also go to the inaugural Buffalo Chicken Wing Festival, and they played that clip about like every hour. So I don't think this was mere coincidence.
Okay.
Somebody definitely watched Osmosis Jones.
Is that a good movie?
I enjoy it. I think it's a pretty good, fun, animated movie. Bill Murray's really, really funny in it. And this was in a weird time where he wasn't necessarily on the rise. It was like weirdly between Rushmore and Lost in Translation, but as a mainstream comedic actor, he wasn't really in big comedies regularly anymore.
And who is the comedian that played Osmosis Jones? Was that Chris Rock?
It is Chris Rock.
Yeah.
And he's really fun in it. I remember, too, it just being a very visually creative film. It is kind of about, like, a cop inside, like, the human body.
He's supposed to be, like, a white blood cell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a very strange movie, like a lot of animated movies were in the late 90s and early 2000s. And then you had another Buffalo-related... film as well.
All these movies are weird, man. And the one I'm about to mention is also weird. It's a fantasy drama starring James Franco and Sienna Miller, I think is her last name.
Sienna Miller, yeah.
Yeah, Sienna Miller. The movie is called Camille. It's kind of like romantic comedy Weekend at Bernie's.
Interesting.
I mean, with less of like James Franco puppeting around a dead body and more of a he's a terrible partner and he's like begrudgingly marrying this woman and she wants to see Niagara Falls really badly. So he's just like too lazy and unfocused to say, I don't want to marry you. And then like, they're getting into a fight on his motorcycle when they're on their way to Buffalo and they get into a motorcycle accident and she hits a tree and it breaks her neck and
Oof.
Kills her. But because she is so excited about the trip, like, her emotions propel her forward even though her body is dead. So now she is basically like a lovesick zombie character that's with him, and he's just like, oh man. And he also feels bad because he killed her. He was the one reason why they got in the motorcycle accident. He takes her all the way across the states. They end up in Niagara Falls, and there's so many strange things. Like, her body is actively decaying throughout the movie, and at a point in time, like, she's gray, and they were like, how do we hide the fact that she's like smelly and gray? And they see these horses that are painted, so they paint her body like, I can't remember if it's like blue or orange or something like that.
Weird.
And she's wearing a really brightly colored wig, and they finally get her to Niagara Falls, and that it just gets fantastical at that point. Like, it's already fantasy. It gets even more fantasy at that point.
So it sounds like, in terms of endorsements of the city, though, if your desire is so strong to visit Buffalo that it can bring you back from the dead, that sounds like a pretty great endorsement.
We've also got two back-to-back movies where, like, people are going vacation to Buffalo, or, like, near Buffalo.
So then I want to highlight real quick two movies that aren't necessarily set in, or set in Buffalo, but are probably the two most famous movies filmed here. And one is The Natural. This is the Oscar-nominated sports baseball drama starring Robert Redford and Glenn Close, directed by Barry Levinson. It was kind of supposed to be sort of early, I believe, 1920s, 1930s Chicago. And because of a lot of the Art Deco architecture that Buffalo has, it kind of played double for Chicago during that period. Fantastic movie, really great sports drama. That's not necessarily the genre that I gravitate to the most. It's a really good film, and there's definitely some iconic Buffalo sights in here. It is kind of weird to see All-High Stadium double as for Wrigley Field. Not maybe necessarily the first sort of pairing you would make mentally. But, you know, they're able to pull it off, and it is sort of one of the more iconic films filmed here. The other that's not necessarily filmed in the city of Buffalo, but is actually filmed, and this is how few films up until about maybe a couple years ago were filmed in Buffalo, that this is, again, one of the most famous, tangentially related, is the famous John Hughes film, and I'm going to say probably my favorite overall film on this list, Plane, Trains, and Automobiles.
Oh, yeah.
The famous scene where the car starts on fire while they're driving in Plane, Trains, and Automobiles was shot on the thruway just in the South Towns in Western New York. And you probably have seen Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. It's an incredible movie. It's one of probably my all-time favorite comedy films. The fact that Western New York even got a cameo in that film, it brings a lot of joy to me. I think John Candy's like maybe one of, if not the greatest comedic actor for me. I just absolutely love him. Steve Martin, too, just fucking rules in it. But those were two movies I just wanted to touch on real quick. There is one movie that stands out to me, though, because of it's both a great movie. It's set in Buffalo. It was filmed in Buffalo. And I feel like of every Buffalo movie I've seen, it's the one that captures the city the best. And that's a 2007 dramedy called The Savages. And it's about sort of two, sort of, I guess you could call them like New York intellectuals who have sort of a very problematic or troubling relationship with their father. He wasn't the best father to them. He was kind of abusive. They have an estranged relationship. And they find out that he's sort of dying, and they have to go back to Buffalo to take care of him in his final days. And it's also about the brother and sister's relationship with each other. The brother and sister here are played by Laura Linney and Philip Seymour Hoffman. And for me, Philip Seymour Hoffman's my favorite actor ever. Just he, I love pretty much every performance he's ever given. And this was actually during a really incredible run he had in 2007, where he went to the Golden Globes and was nominated for 3 different performances in the same year. And one of those was this in The Savages. But what I love about the movie is that it's an incredibly powerful and beautiful and funny film. But as a Buffalonian and as Buffalo movies go, it's one that it takes place in the dead of winter in Buffalo. You see the snow, you see some of the beautiful architecture, but you also see some of the suburbs. A lot of it was shot in like places like Cheektowaga. Some of it was shot downtown. It's not the most beautiful or glamorous portrait of Buffalo, but it's one that feels real because it captures the climate. And if anybody's lived in Buffalo or visited Buffalo, that's kind of what I would feel like one of the things we're most identified for. You know Buffalo winters. There's not winters kind of much like it anywhere else. And as a film that captures Buffalo, as a film that captures what Buffalonians are like and what the city is like during that time, it's just a beautiful film. And you know, Philip Seymour Hoffman spent a lot of time in Western New York. It's a place that was close to his heart. He has a lot of family that, and grew up even in parts of Rochester for a lot of his childhood, so he knows Western New York, and you can feel that in his performance. And yeah, love Savages. For me, the best Buffalo movie.
Nice. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up for like our Buffalo suggested movies.
Yeah, let's hope Buffalo meets the level of these.
Yeah, we're going to continue forward with our review of The Blue Blur, Sonic the Hedgehog.
It's time to push buttons.
Your flying eggs are pretty impressive, Mr. Eggman. But let's face it, you'll never catch me.
Confidence, a fool's substitute for intelligence.
That's not good.
Sonic, I know you got the super speed and everything, but Maddie and I?
Totally defenseless. Probably gonna get blown up.
Pretty much, yeah.
Don't worry. I know exactly what to do.
I was not expecting that. But I was expecting not to expect something, so it doesn't count.
Yeah, we're gonna talk about Sonic the Hedgehog, The Blue Blur. You remember him from the 90s, the classic battle between Mario and this weird Sega mascot that they came up with.
Yeah, and I mean, full disclosure here, I'm completely Team Sonic. I did not own a NES or SNES as a kid. I don't think I owned a Nintendo system until GameCube.
Oh, wow.
So I did have a Genesis, big Sonic kid.
I will say that, like, I was disappointed to see Sega lose the battle to Nintendo and then Sonic become a part of, like, Nintendo.
Yeah. But, I mean, getting to the film, what was your anticipation like for the film itself?
I was, I saw the poster for it, and the only thing I remember seeing were those legs with those shoes.
Yes.
And being terrified of, like, oh God, what are they doing?
Yeah.
Why are they making something bad?
I think it was, famously, the trailer came out early last year. In fact, the trailer came out, I think, even prior to the Cats trailer. And it did have the same kind of repulsed internet reaction when that first dropped.
There were a lot of bad trailers coming out around then, because, like, Aladdin also came out, too.
Yeah. But they didn't make any changes. They did. Yeah. They did. Genie changed. The look of Genie changed.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was specifically very strong outcry about the Sonic trailer and how Sonic looked. He had really big teeth and a strange athletic muscular body.
Yeah, he looked more humanoid, like furry-esque. It's just very strange.
Yeah. Or it almost looked like they were trying to make him look closer to an actual hedgehog than an act like Sonic, which looks nothing like an actual hedgehog.
Yeah.
And then they did spend a lot of money to go back and fix that, which is why the film ended up getting released around now.
Yeah, it was like a $5 million mistake.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what the exact amount of budget on that was.
That was what I read.
It definitely must have taken them ages because, I mean, you know, you think they had to go back and fix every shot that Sonic was in the movie.
So here's my understanding of, like, visual effects, and when they create those types of scenes, a lot of times the only things that are done are the ones that are in the trailer, especially when the trailer gets released, and they're still working on those as it goes. Like, they've already filmed everything. They can't fix the way the movie looks in real time because they use a tennis ball in place of Sonic. So they have to change the model and then just re-render that throughout the whole movie.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's necessarily that crazy, but I mean, $5 million is a lot of money, and it definitely took months of work.
Right, because if, I mean, that's the thing, is you don't know at that stage, you know, with the trailer out, at what point, like, how much of the film was complete, and how close to, you know, because sometimes studios are almost done with the movie and just sit on it until the release date, you know? So you would imagine they had to spend a lot of time, you know, because you still have to consider things of, like, how the light is going to look on Sonic in this shot, and a lot of that's digitally done. If you're completely having to redo the character model, you're having to take that into account too.
Yeah,
I'm guessing it was a lot of tireless work.
Yeah, when your team is worked so hard to create something, only to be that viscerally hated, like nobody liked it. I don't remember anybody saying anything positive about that.
It definitely became like memed to like to hell. A lot of people said that the original Sonic model looked like Steve Buscemi.
Oh, no.
Which, I'm sorry, Steve Buscemi, that's not fair to you. But, so, I mean, they did fix up the model. I have to be honest, even with that, I was not excited for this movie.
Yeah.
Like, at all.
I didn't know who all was involved until much later and closer to the release of the movie. Like, Ben Schwartz, I didn't know had anything to do with the movie.
Okay.
And also, the only person that I really recognized was the guy that played Cyclops from X-Men and...
James Marsden.
Yes. And...
Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey is Dr. Robotnik, or of some version of Dr. Robotnik. Yeah.
Which I did see one review, and I want to credit them. I think it was on The Ringer, who said that Jim Carrey in this movie is playing the old bassist of Interpol. And that's exactly what he looks like.
That's great.
But I was definitely not excited going into this movie. What did you think of Sonic the Hedgehog?
Well, seeing the redesign got me a little pumped up, but at the same time also, like, I mean, regardless of how you fix this design, this movie is probably still going to be bad. But I think in the end, I ended up liking this movie. It's not the greatest movie I've ever seen.
Right.
But it's, like, around the same level as Detective Pikachu for me, as far as, like, how it is as a children's movie, an introduction to new audiences of a character that's been around since the 90s. I thought that was...
Yeah, so I would say for me it was actually, too, pretty similarly pleasantly surprised. I expected this to be, like, an unholy abomination.
Yeah.
And honestly, I would say, I'd put it probably around Detective Pikachu and saying that this is a very capably made film.
Yeah.
It's not anything incredibly well done, but... There is, like, something weird about Sonic the Hedgehog as that it made, and I don't think it's just the fact that it is an iconic 90s character, it did feel like the kind of kids' movies I grew up on, and I mean that kind of as much as an insult as I do a compliment, like, because I don't know if those movies were necessarily good, you know? I don't know if something like Small Soldiers was a good movie, but I know 7-year-old me... found that movie very meaningful.
And you're gonna rush out and get all those toys.
The what is it? The Gargonauts or something like that?
Yeah.
But like, it did have a very simplistic plot with, I will say, like, credit to James Marsden and Jim Carrey. They are definitely putting the effort in.
They did a good job.
And I think that's probably also part, if I want to focus too on why it, this movie felt so nostalgic for me, is this is a Jim Carrey I haven't seen in a long time, which is just his full manic comedic presence is on display. Like, every time he is on screen, and I see this as somebody who grew up not a fan of Jim Carrey's comedy. I don't really like The Mask. I don't... Liar Liar, I think, is fine. I love him, like, as a dramatic actor.
Yeah.
But I don't really like his comedy. But everything about the tone of this movie, and that performance, and that character, it did just kind of create this weirdly, like, comforting stew for me. Where I was just like, I feel transported. And yeah, it was kind of just great to see that kind of performance from Jim Carrey again. Like, whether or not it makes me laugh, there is something just so physical and intense about the comedic energy he brings that it's hard not to just kind of like be impressed by like the boldness of it.
Yeah.
I really appreciated Jim Carrey in this movie. And yeah, as I said, it did feel like the kind of kids' movies I grew up on. I don't know what your feeling was like for the movie.
I mean, so what's interesting about the Sonic movie is that it is kind of like its own take on the Sonic history and lore and storyline and background. Basically stating that like Sonic is kind of like traveling across worlds. Which, I don't know if that really happens in the games at all.
Yeah.
But, you know, Sonic grew up and stayed basically where he was the whole time, and he was always surrounded by people. But this one kind of, like, presents him in a more sympathetic, depressing light, where it's like he's alone as he's growing up, and he's spent the majority of his time, like, moving from different place to different place, only to find himself having to do it all over again. And you know, it's good from a storytelling standpoint. Is it accurate to a Sonic like lore historical point? I don't think so.
Yeah.
Like even like having Jim Carrey as Dr. Robotnik is really strange for me, because Dr. Robotnik does not look like that in my head.
Right.
He's gone through some like changes in my mind, being like this weird teardrop bean shape from like the earlier games to like having the round head with a giant mustache and robots everywhere and kind of like being cruel to animals.
Yeah. Like, I think it's the movie's attempt to try to, because of all this stuff, again, it's game, video game logic.
Yeah.
It doesn't, like, there. It's almost hard to make cinematic logic of that.
Yeah.
So I think it's the attempt to ground it as much as possible so this makes sense for an audience.
Well, I mean, I totally agree with what you're saying, is that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
Do I like it? I don't.
Okay.
But, like, does it work for this movie? Yes. You know, it's kind of strange, because this is a complete reintroduction of Sonic to me in a different way,
mm-hmm.
especially in the sense of like how he acts and like what his motives are, and like, you know, because Sonic has always been kind of carefree, and you know, in this movie he is a little bit carefree, but he has some wants and needs in the movie.
Sure. Yeah. I think that the difficult part is, and I say this as somebody who probably, I definitely have a background with Sonic. My background with Sonic ends in, like, 1995. So in terms of, like, me trying to, like, identify Sonic's personality, like, I don't really know him beyond the, like, 16-bit character that, like, sometimes does some cool animations. So, I mean, I didn't worry too much. I was kind of wondering how they were going to characterize him, and I do think, given that this is mainly a family or children's film, I think they found a really good sort of empathetic arc for him that a lot of children will identify with, because in a lot of ways Sonic in this movie does feel like a kid.
Yeah.
And I do like that he is somebody just kind of basically who's a loner, not by choice, and just searching for a friend. And I think that's something, like, if you're maybe 9 or 10 or something, even if you have, like, a lot of friends where you are kind of that kid that gets bullied, like, that's definitely something you can identify with. So I think there will be a lot of kids that see themselves in that story. I do think the humor is hit or miss for me. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. There is a really good sort of cameo from Adam Pally in this. Mm-hmm. Anytime he's on screen, I'm having a good time. I think he's probably only in this movie because him and Ben Schwartz, who voices Sonic, are just like best friends in real life. And he's probably like, hey, can my buddy Adam be in this? And they're like, yeah, sure, we don't care. But, I mean, I was impressed, too, like, visually for this movie. It is kind of, for all the production problems they had, the way it actually ended up it's very inviting. It's colorful. The Sonic design does look good with how they finally finished it. I do like a lot of the Dr. Robotnik stuff, even if it is a little bit of a deviation from that in the video game. I kind of liked seeing... Because what you see in the film, sort of, with the Jim Carrey performance as Dr. Robotnik, is that he starts sort of one way and gets sort of aggressively more Robotnik-y as the movie goes on. Like, he kind of loses his hair by the end of the movie. He has the little drones around him, which are kind of, like, similar to some of the things you would see in the boss battles back in the old Sonic games.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like thinking, like, them trying to come up with a rational version of these very irrational, weird things from the video games. And I kind of liked seeing how they would ground that. There's some stuff in this movie I absolutely did not need. There's a scene where they go to a biker bar that I don't love. I'm not a fan of that.
That's how you become friends, though.
But, you know, for as low as my expectations were for this, I think if you're somebody who has a deep affection for the Sonic character or really wants to see any kind of video game movie done just done well enough that it can justify the genre continuing to grow, I think definitely go see it. And if you have kids and they really want to see it, like, absolutely go out and see it. I think a kid would love this movie. I think if it was 7 or 8 year old me seeing this movie, I probably would be like, honestly, over the moon about it. I would have loved it. I know I'm going to be having to see it again next weekend with my little cousin because I promised I'd go with him for Christmas.
That's actually gonna be really fun.
Yeah, and he's obsessed with Sonic, so I'm sure he's gonna have a great time.
Yeah, the theater that I was in had a lot of kids having a blast, and they loved the movie. It actually made me appreciate the movie for what it was a little more. The movie's not for me.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm too old for this Sonic, unfortunately, but it is done well. And I think what I do like about what happened in the process was when people reacted, studio said, okay, we'll fix it. And then they took the time and the effort to make the movie look better so that fans could be more excited about it.
Yeah. I mean, I have a very mixed reaction to that, which is I think in this case, that was great. I'm very scared of studios listening to fans in general, because sometimes I think fans can be just wildly wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'm glad it worked out in this case. I'm very skeptical or scared of a future where fans do, though, dictate the narrative on sort of like...
I mean, we're not going to find ourselves in a place where that's going to happen that much.
Yeah.
But, I mean, in this case, it was a happy event where it made the movie better.
Yes. I think what they did is they didn't sacrifice anything from a storytelling perspective. They simply responded to how audiences were receiving the visuals of the film.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think in that case is a perfectly smart and appropriate response. It's more things like, and we're not going to get too deep into this again, but people obviously know we differed on Rise of Skywalker, and I think that was a movie that was very much driven by response, by fan response to the previous film. And then obviously also there's people who really do not like Birds of Prey and are already being like, well, you know, X this from the DCU, say it's not canon. And it's like, no, tough. If you don't like it because you're a weirdo, just accept it and don't watch it, you know? But I mean, in this case, it's perfectly well justified. Maybe if the producers of Cats had listened to this advice and fixed the cats... No, they still couldn't have saved the movie. Cats is just terrible.
Honestly, it's when you can't polish a turd.
Yeah.
That's the thing. You know, Sonic the Hedgehog, heartfelt, definitely has some great moments for people who are fans of the Sonic franchise. There's definitely a moment in the movie that involves rings and Sonic getting hurt that I enjoyed quite a lot.
Yeah.
I know that sounds demented, but you'll get it when you see it if you're a fan of Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah, there's a lot of nice little Easter eggs for fans in the movie. I also, there's even kind of, I normally hate a post-credits tease, but I like this one.
It's good. Stick around at the end. You're gonna get some really exciting stuff to see for what's coming up for that. In that franchise.
Yeah. So I think, you know, given how it did at the box office, there's almost certainly gonna be a sequel. You know what? I'd probably watch it.
You know, we've got Pikachu. We've got Sonic. If they put out any more of these Nintendo characters, we're gonna have a Super Smash Brothers movie on our hands.
Will it be good? Will it be bad? I guess we'll have to stay tuned. But I think for me, that's definitely a mild recommendation for Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah, it's if you're interested, go see it. I think you'll enjoy it. If you were a little tentative, you won't be so upset.
Yeah. So that's it for Sonic the Hedgehog. And we're going to talk just shortly about a couple other movies that me and Brian saw that are in theaters now.
This is the middle section of the podcast. Welcome.
Yeah, and in the past, a lot of times we've used this space to provide our sneak previews, which are basically just small mini reviews of films that you can either find out in theaters right now or on streaming. And you just saw one that you wanted to talk about, right, Brian?
Yeah, so I recently went and saw a one-night-only Fathom Event movie called Ride Your Wave, directed by Masaki Yuasa. Past films that he's done are The Night is Short, Walk On Girl, and Mind Games. These movies are super vivid. They have a very unique fluidity to them. The characters are super, like, just dynamic in movement. The camera just flies through bodies sometimes. It's a pretty wild experience.
And this is like an anime movie, right?
This is an anime. This is an animated feature film. And this one's a love story.
Okay.
And it's like, in the past, watching these movies that this director has done have been kind of like shocking in certain ways. In this case, it's kind of, it's more toned down. This is a very cute movie. It's about a young couple that meets, and they fall in love with each other. And they create like a really strong relationship. But tragedy strikes shortly into the movie where the boyfriend is killed in an accident.
It's heavy.
And yeah. And she and the main character, she's not really sure how to cope. And so there's a song that they like kind of bonded over. It was like a really cheesy pop song, you know,
as you find tend to in like anime movies.
Like, I have a feeling this song was specifically written for this movie.
Yeah.
But so she finds herself singing this whenever she like misses him, and at a certain point she realizes that like the water is acting weird around her when she starts singing this song, and then she starts seeing him in the water, which is moves to a whole slew of like issues that are both funny and sad, and also just kind of like unsettling at times because people aren't really sure what to take from her actions. Like, they think maybe she's just so distraught. But the movie is visually just beautiful. Lots of really vibrant blues and oranges throughout, because you want, they have these characters set up in a way that you can identify with them immediately just because of color schemes, which I really like about the style of this
Interesting.
Movie.
So like contrasting colors to represent both characters.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. And you know, the lead girl, she's orange and the guy is blue because he's water, and those are complementary if you know color theory.
Yeah.
So it was like a really smart design choice. And yeah, it was this is also the third or fourth feature film from this particular distribution or like animation house. The Night is Short, Walk On Girl was their last movie that they did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so you definitely you dug it, felt some emotions.
I liked it. I would say like my only gripe about the movie is the fact that song is going to be stuck in your head at the end.
Okay.
And it's not necessarily good.
It's like one of those bad J-pop songs that gets stuck in your head after you've seen the anime movie.
I could hum it for you. It's like...
That sounds very J-pop.
Yep. So, like, that's going to be... That just happens all the time. And... But the way she sings it at certain points in time is, like, gleeful and happy. And other times, it's just really sad. But yeah, I would say like if you're looking for like something that's a little bit more fantasy but not like ridiculous like action or anything like that, you're still gonna get a lot of action from some surfing scenes that are in the movie because the main character is a surfer and a very good one. It's pretty cool. There's a nice twist at the end that's really that like makes it even more powerful emotionally. So yeah, I would say if you have an opportunity to see it, go check it out. Where I saw it was as a special event in theaters, and at the end they talked to one of the producers of the film, and they answered a lot of questions as to what they did and why they chose to do things certain ways.
Oh, cool.
That was really nice.
So that sounds definitely like something worth checking out. You know, I'll be sure to like scope out on VOD if it comes along. Or if it gets a, you know, expanded theatrical release, that'd be cool too.
Yeah.
I too went to the movie theaters recently to see another very different kind of romance story out there. This is The Photograph. It's a film by Stella Maggie. I believe this is her first like wide release film. She's done a couple smaller independent films that I haven't gotten around to. I believe the last one was called The Weeknd, and it got a decent amount of praise. And it stars Issa Rae and Lakeith Stanfield, which is primarily why I was very interested in this movie. I love both of those actors. And it is essentially a romance that has two narratives, both the one happening in the present between these two people who love each other or who have met each other and are starting to blossom a relationship that might end up in love, and the relationship that Issa Rae's character's mother had with somebody that the Lakeith Stanfield character is doing a story on for the magazine that he writes for. And it's got sort of these two intersecting narratives. A lot of ways this movie reminded me of The Notebook, famous Rachel McAdams, Ryan Gosling romance. I will say, sadly, that you hear The Notebook, and I feel like The Notebook kind of gets a tough beat because of it is like the ultimate like tearjerkery movie. Like, but in a lot of ways, that's a pretty good movie. I feel like this doesn't reach the heights of that. I will say there is, before I get into some of my issues with it, there are certain things I do really like about this film. For starters, I like Lakeith Stanfield in pretty much everything he's been in. I love that he gets to play a romantic lead here because I feel like he is one of the most like naturally charming actors out there these days. So he's so perfectly suited for this role. Likewise, Issa Rae is like a fantastic comedic presence. If you've seen her show Insecure on HBO, it's really good. She's great on that. The problem is, while I like both of these actors, I don't know that at any moment in this film I actually believe they had any chemistry. Like, there was nothing between the two of them that ever felt more than, like, just two friends hanging out to me. And the whole movie kind of is very low stakes, to the point where there's not much dramatic tension driving it. And that's probably why some people will enjoy it as much as probably dislike it, because at the same time, if you are just going in for like a Sunday movie to watch by yourself that you don't really care that much about and just a time killer, it's breezy. Like the time will fly by. It's beautiful to look at without really being great cinematography. It's just more like the production value in this movie's great. Like there'll be moments where you're watching and you're like, that's a really great kitchen. I love how that kitchen looks. Or like the soundtrack for the film is really well curated. There's a lot of like alt R&B stuff, like Anderson .Paak and Steve Lacy on here. So the soundtrack rules. It's just sadly there's not much to really make you invest on a deeper level than that. Everybody in this film is very charming and likable. It's very pretty to look at. If there's one thing I do really like about the film, which I think it dips its toes in but doesn't get deep enough into, is that I feel like for people our age, and especially for like millennials in general, romance is kind of a very different thing than it was maybe even 10, 15 years ago because of, you know, the internet, social media, just the sheer presence of the amount of options you have out there. And I do feel like people are a little bit more hesitant to be committal these days, and so even just the early stages of a relationship are kind of more difficult to navigate. And that's almost where this entire film is centered around, is just in those early processes and figuring out like, are we gonna be anything? Are we just hanging out? And there's not much drama around it. It's kind of just like having those conversations. And some of those scenes are the most interesting part of the film. It's just sadly, those are only maybe like 20 minutes of a 2-hour film. So I guess, I mean, I have a lot of polarizing back and forth feelings on this film. I would say all in all, I'm not going to give it a recommendation. It's more of a, to me, this is a solid like 5 out of 10. If you do really love these actors, you might still have a good time watching it. If you love good looking kitchens, run out and see it immediately. Tons of good kitchens in this movie.
So you said like that one element has about 20 minutes. How much of the movie is that kitchen?
So there's a lot of good kitchen presence. So I would say when we're not looking at beautiful kitchens, we are looking at very beautiful office buildings. There's some good art galleries in this movie. A lot of great New York architecture. There's not a lot of ugly backgrounds, but I'd say the kitchen specifically, maybe about a good 20 minutes. It gets about as much screen time. They are in that kitchen a lot. Somebody spent a while putting that together, and props, ultimate movie kitchens. So I'm going to say the photograph for me gets a 5 out of 10. The kitchen in the photograph gets an 11 out of 10.
All right. Well, with that, those were two films that we saw this week. If they're near you, maybe check them out.
Or maybe don't. But we'll be talking about a movie coming up and expressing our views on that. And that is Buffaloed.
Okay, sure. I counterfeited Bill's ticks, but it was for a bigger cause, higher education. Higher education is the key to financial freedom.
Ma'am? Your scam is desecrating the sacred ground of our Buffalo Bills.
No, it's not.
And now for the feature presentation of the Buffalo local film. Buffaloed?
Buffaloed, yeah. So we should probably contextualize this before we get too deep into it, because I'm sure some people who are listening to the show, they have not heard of this movie, and they probably don't know why we're covering it. Yeah. So if you aren't a local listener of ours, we are broadcasting from Buffalo, New York, a place where I feel like we don't get too much attention. We don't normally get much media coverage, but we're starting to get weirdly a lot of films being filmed here.
Yeah, the film industry is starting to take a liking to how cheap it is to film movies here. And we're pretty close to Toronto and Rochester, and those are places that people tend to film a lot too.
Yeah, we recently had A Quiet Place 2 was filmed here. Mm-hmm. Guillermo del Toro is coming back for Nightmare Alley, which...
And you've probably heard of a film a few years ago, Bruce Almighty.
Yeah, famously back to Jim Carrey.
I think that Ninja Turtles 2 movie has like a whole sequence where one of our major highways was shut down and they were filming explosion scenes in the middle of the night.
Actually, on that Bruce tip real quick, I don't know if you saw the link I sent you a couple days ago, but there's also, because Jim Carrey did grow up in Toronto, he did recently do an interview with a reporter from Buffalo for Sonic and just talked at length about going to Fantasy Island as a kid, and that was really cool.
It's one of our terrible theme parks.
It's one of our couple terrible theme parks, yeah.
We got at least two. I think we only have two.
Yeah. That's a couple. They're both terrible. But so with a movie being called Buffaloed and being set in Buffalo, New York, with a screenwriter who's from Lockport, we thought this was a relevant movie to cover. It also, if you are not seeing it in the Buffalo area, it is playing in limited release across the country right now, and it's on video on demand.
Yeah, if you have YouTube, you have a way to rent it and watch it.
Yeah, and so going into Buffaloed, what was your feelings like or anticipation for the film?
I wasn't sure, actually. It looked like it was going to be like paying homage to City,
mm-hmm.
at least from like a lot of like iconic Buffalo things like chicken wings and the Bills and poverty, you know?
Yeah.
And I wasn't quite sure what was going to happen. It seemed like the main character was very loud and energetic. Watching the trailer, I was like, this could be okay.
Mm-hmm.
I recognized one of the actors from Sorry to Bother You and thought, oh, okay.
Yeah. I actually didn't know about this movie at all, that it existed until about 3 weeks ago when you mentioned it to me. I think one of our local theaters, the North Park Theater, they were promoting it a little bit. They are the theater that is filming it or screening it locally. And so that's kind of where I ran into any of the promotion for the film. I did see the trailer in advance. I thought it looked not great. But I was curious. I do really like the lead actress, Zoe Deutsch. She was in Richard Linklater's... what's it called? Everybody Wants Some, I believe it's the movie. Yeah. Everybody Wants Some. She's great in that. And it's a really great movie. It's kind of very much like a spiritual successor to Dazed and Confused.
Oh.
And she's fantastic in that. She was also in Zombieland 2 last year and was probably the only part of that movie I really liked. She was very funny and like kind of the scene stealer of that movie. So I have a lot of investment in her as an actress. So seeing that too, she was in something that was in my hometown. That was kind of exciting, but I didn't have the highest expectations, and if I'm getting into the movie, somehow it didn't even meet those expectations for me. I hated this movie.
I'm going to say this definitely feels like a first try at somebody who wanted to like make a movie so badly. This, it felt like a first screenplay almost in a strange way.
This movie is very rough.
Yeah, it's rough in a lot of places. And the screenplay is written by Brian Sacca.
Yeah.
And he lived in the general area.
Grew up in Lockport.
And he apparently went to school at Nichols High School, which is one of... It's like right in this, like in the North Buffalo region.
Right around the theater that they're showing at.
Yep. And, you know, the movie is filled with a lot of references to the Buffalo iconography. But then there's like some weird stuff. Like, I think one of the things that I have an issue with the most with this movie is that it makes such a big point to be a Buffalo movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like in an extreme way, it's like, this is the Buffalo movie. This is about Buffalo. And it kind of like misses some really obvious things, especially from like local brands of beer and like how people act and colloquial phrases.
Yeah, I think so. I want to touch on a couple things here real quick, because of what you're mentioning is, and I hate to focus so much on this, but it is part of my problem with the film, which is that essentially I saw a lot of reviews from people locally who are friends or people who I trust complaining about this movie not being very Buffalo or not being accurate in its depiction of Buffalo. And for to be honest, until I saw the movie, I almost kind of shrugged it off, because I was kind of like, sure, but I don't really care how accurate it is to Buffalo as long as it's a good movie.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't have cared either.
The problem is it's not a good movie. but it is what you're mentioning. It's almost like... So the other thing about the screenwriter is that he is from Lockport, but he hasn't lived here in almost 20 years.
Yeah.
And it's like, you can exactly tell. Like, the Buffalo that you see in this movie does in a lot of ways feel like the Buffalo I remember from maybe 1995, 1996, when I was a small child.
It's a very old mindset of Buffalo, because the movie takes place... This is a thing that was confusing to me. I did not know what the time period was for this movie until much later, when they mentioned that they could collect 20-year-old debt, and the debt was from like 1998. This film is supposed to be placed in 2018.
Yeah.
And people look like they're from the fucking 80s, and it like everybody has like a landline phone, and no, people sometimes use cellular phones. And that was the only reason why I was like, oh, well, I don't really know if that was like a mistake or if it was supposed to be present, and they're just saying Buffalo is extremely behind the times.
Yeah, and the other thing about it for me is it's also that, as you said, they almost beat you over the head with how Buffalo, like, the references are in this mm-hmm. movie. And it almost kind of reminded me, and we're going to make sure to put a clip in here of it, of there was recently the Super Bowl commercial of with what's his name, Chris Evans and Rachel Dratch, where it was them doing bad Boston accents, like of the Smart Park feature on this car, and the whole joke is just Boston stereotypes, and this entire movie felt like that but with Buffalo.
Yeah,
there's like a ridiculous scene where you have like a judge, a reoccurring joke with a judge asking if you prefer Anchor Bar or Duff's,
but also sloppily eating wings in the middle of like a court case.
Yeah,
which I've never experienced.
And the amount of times they bring up, eat your wings, have wings, we're gonna have wings, we're gonna have pop and pizza. Like,
I like the pop and pizza thing because that actually felt more real than like eat your wings. It's like I heard there was gonna be pop and pizza.
I just from the number of times they go out of their way to say pop, and maybe it is because I am like have been here my whole life, it just kind of felt like beating you over the head, here, pop, pop, pop.
I am a transplant, like I am from the South originally.
Yeah.
And so like
it might be one of those things that like stick out more to you when you move here. You're like, oh, I do notice I say that, and that's kind
of
funny.
Yeah, like I recognize a lot of the things in the movie, like what they're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so strange because it feels like when they did try to get things correct, they still did miss it.
Yeah.
Like, but they also repeated those things, like what you said. I don't know. Have you ever heard anyone say jag off in, like, your entire life?
I see, actually, okay, so this is one that's funny for me, because I actually have.
But how many times have you heard anybody say jag off?
But this goes back to exactly what I was saying, which is it feels like the 90s version of Buffalo.
Yeah.
I remember hearing people say jag off a lot when I was a kid. And I do feel like that's almost like an old South Buffalo thing from like the 90s. And that's what this whole movie felt like. It felt like somebody had a version of Buffalo that they based entirely off one portion of Buffalo that people locally here know.
Mm-hmm.
and they based it off a version of that from 20 years ago. And so the version of Buffalo that exists in this movie feels so foreign and alien to the city that exists as it is now. Again, I would be able to excuse all of this if the film was better, but the humor in this movie is so broad. Like, everything in this movie that is a joke is kind of, I don't know, it's very, like, ugly. There's a dark humor to it, but a lot of the jokes are also just as simple as, ha, look how funny they say that word. Yeah. Look at that weird thing they do. And when your entire comedy is based essentially around...
gags?
Around, like, a weird archetype that doesn't exist. Like, a caricature of a place. And that caricature isn't even accurate. That's where it's really, really misses the boat for me. The brilliance of comedy at its best in terms of being able to laugh at something and is when you are able to pinpoint something so specific that it rings true. And there's only one gag in this entire movie that maybe it is also just because I am so Buffalo that I thought it was funny. And maybe it was the most Buffalo joke in this.
I'm interested in what
which
it
is in one of the very final scenes. The Zoe Deutsch character is naming all the mob bosses, or the, like, not mob bosses, but local collector bosses.
Yeah.
And she names one of the Polish ones from Cheektowaga and says, I can't pronounce your last names. And he's like, well, it's all consonants. And with Buffalo being such a Polish city, there is, like, that thing of so many Buffalo Polish people, you know, where you read their last name, you're like, I'm not even going to try. Like, I can't. We have a lot of Polish Buffalo friends whose last names I would have struggled to pronounce if somebody didn't read them for me.
It's difficult. I don't do it a lot of times unless I've heard it for a few years.
Yeah. But that was the only one where I'm like, this is such a specific Buffalo joke that it makes me laugh. But otherwise, it was really hollow for me. I don't want to beat up on this movie entirely. There are certain things about it I do like. A couple of them I will highlight. First of all, the movie does center around the concept of debt collection.
Yes, which is a very big thing in Buffalo.
Yes.
I know so many people that have worked in debt collection.
And apparently we are actually the epicenter of debt collection in the United States. Mm-hmm. Like, there are more debt collection facilities in Buffalo than anywhere else.
So we're sorry to any of you with outstanding student loans who are currently being called by rude Buffalonians trying to get your money.
Yeah, and the thing is, when the movie decides to forego just trying to mine comedy from a caricature of Buffalo as a city, it does get into a really interesting depiction of the sort of debt collection role. Because I have worked in that field, and it is 100% accurate in terms of the terrible and outrageous and really dark and ridiculous things people do. Almost everything you hear in this movie that a character says they've done to get money off of somebody, I know somebody who has done that. I used to sit next to people who would lie about, like, people's cars being repossessed to get them to pay on their student loans. Like, really terrible, dark, shady stuff. It's a really dark world. And there's moments in the film, too, where the film breaks the fourth wall and kind of goes sort of full Big Short on you and kind of explains things about that debt collection world. And I thought that was really engrossing.
Yeah, those are some of, like, the more interesting parts of the movie, for sure.
Yeah, and I think one of the things about that that's fascinating but also weird is that those fourth wall breaks come to us from the main character, the Zoe Deutsch character. And the only problem I have with that is those are some of the most engrossing scenes, but the character in those fourth wall breaking scenes has a self-awareness that we don't see present in that character anywhere else in that scene. We know she's smart, but we never see the self-awareness of, like, she kind of, again, just turns into the same caricature joke as all the other characters in the movie in any scene where she's not breaking the fourth wall. Which I'm not going to saddle Zoe Deutsch as an actress with. I think she's trying really hard with very bad material. I think she's an incredibly talented actress.
She's definitely one of the shining points of this movie, for sure, as far as like being able to deliver dialogue quickly and rapidly with what she knows.
Yeah. I also think the other thing is, I think she's the only one, maybe the only one in the movie that actually sounds like she's actually doing a Buffalo accent.
Everybody else sounds like they're from the Midwest, yeah, or like Michigan or something.
Really doing like a weird Fargo accent.
Yeah.
Or some people slip into like Bostonian. And I'm like, this sound, what is this? What am I listening to? The other thing I would just say is, Zoe Deutsch, please fire your agent. Get somebody who will get you better movies, because you seriously deserve to be in them. You truly could be like a huge star.
You're extremely charismatic, and I feel like that's what kind of kept me watching the movie, was the fact that she was the center point of it throughout.
Yeah.
Like, and that she wasn't afraid to like be like ugly in points of the movie, to like a degree where it's like she's kind of unlikable.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But her charisma carries her on.
She's got definitely, I feel like, very much like sort of an Emma Stone sort of charisma to her, where she's not afraid to go very dark or very outlandish or very big or broad or whatever she has to do to elicit a reaction. It's just that the film doesn't know what the hell it wants to be. I think
the film does know what it wants to be. It just doesn't do a very good job.
Is it supposed to be satire? Is it supposed to be like?
Brian Sacca played a character in a successful Martin Scorsese film, The Wolf of Wall Street.
Yes,
and this movie borrows so much imagery from that, and it tries to be like that, like grab the quick buck by like undercutting everybody else.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because I was thinking this in my head when I was leaving, but I never put that together because I was unaware of that. It does feel at times like a very bad version of the early scenes in The Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah.
When he's first coming up and kind of working out of this shitty auto garage in Wolf of Wall Street. But it doesn't have... I mean, I guess you kind of can't compare this movie to a Martin Scorsese film. That's kind of an unfair comparison.
But I mean, I think that's what the screenplay was trying to get across. Like, like Buffalo has these things that are like just as despicable as like this guy who is conning everybody. But
it's that kind of over the top, ridiculous. Actually, I think you're right on that, in terms of being like a dark satire and kind of purposely over the top and ridiculous. Yeah, I think it was supposed to be like a Buffalo Wolf of Wall Street.
Yep.
Damn, my mind is actually kind of blown right now. It's just a very bad version of it. And I mean, there are some cool appearances in here too. I like Judy Greer as an actress. She's great on Arrested Development.
She's not very good in this.
Not good in this at all. And again, we talk about people doing bad accents. Not good. Just very, very bad, very Fargo.
Yeah.
I
don't know who plays the brother, but I kind of like him.
He's good.
I think he's pretty sweet and endearing. Like, he's honestly the only, like, nice, genuinely nice person in the movie.
He also looks and feels very South Buffalo.
Absolutely.
Like, he's the one who feels most authentically Buffalo in this movie. Which, again, that's not the only thing we want to grade this by, but it is... What we're really looking at here is a very bad Wolf of Wall Street with lackluster writing. Can I mention one thing in particular? And this is a very small detail of the film, but it bothered me so fucking much. This movie has the worst sound mixing I have ever heard in like a limited release movie. Like The Room, Tommy Wiseau's The Room has better sound mixing than this movie.
No.
There are scenes where like there's music playing and it sounds like somebody's playing it off their iPhone in the scene. Like, it feels like they were like, hey, we need an R&B song. And then Zoe Deutsch was like, great, I'll load up Spotify and leave it on a desk. And then it's just somehow ended up in the movie. It is awful.
I will say something that I do like about this movie is the color palette's actually pretty consistent.
Yeah.
It's visually very colorful. It does fixate on areas of Buffalo
that are very run down.
That are run down, which is kind of true in about half of the area. You will see,
oh, absolutely.
You will see houses that look like that, and you will see neighborhoods that look like that. However, some of those storefronts that are used were filmed in Toronto.
Yeah, most of the principal photography of the film was done in Toronto.
Yeah.
Essentially, the only, from to my knowledge, the only person in the film, I think, who actually filmed in Buffalo was Zoe Deutsch for, okay, like that weird opening running scene, which, you know, ties in later in the movie.
Yeah.
Everything else pretty much was they did some like exterior photography in Buffalo to sort of, you know, for transition shots and stuff like that, but almost everything else was filmed in Toronto. Which, I mean, they are our neighbor, they're close enough, but it's not, it's
they're
very
different,
different.
Places.
Very,
they look very
different cities.
I will say that I did like how some of those scenes were shot. I think there were a couple of moments where the camera actually surprised me with the way it was following the characters. There was a part where they were following down a hallway, and then the camera comes outside the room while the characters go in a room, and then the camera comes back in through a window,
mm-hmm,
which is a really cool follow shot. It was the only one that really stuck out to me besides the ones from the running at the very beginning.
The running, I think, is awful.
The running is like...
The running feels...
It looks like a music video.
I was going to say, it feels like it's the Blink-182 What's My Age Again video.
But they're wearing the Joker's outfit.
Yeah. Yeah. I honestly... My only takeaway of this movie is... First of all, amazing observation with that Wolf of Wall Street comparison. Because
as I was reading about like who was doing this movie, I started to realize, oh, this is what he was trying to do.
Yeah,
and it blew my mind at that moment. But I was also very disappointed that it couldn't just be something original.
Yeah, this is for me a shit movie with a couple good ideas that it doesn't explore well enough to actually be interesting, and an incredibly interesting and good performance from its lead actress stuck in a terrible movie. Again, Zoe Deutsch, please be in good stuff. I really like you. I think that you're going to be in better things, but it's a fucking 3 out of 10 for me. I hated this movie.
I'm not going to say I'm very far away from that. I did enjoy sections of the movie. I did laugh at a lot of the Buffalo humor. But just based on the fact that it really hinged on those gags to like grab onto a Buffalo audience, and still was like super like missing the point, is kind of embarrassing.
Yeah,
like if you're going to do a movie and you're going to be accurate, you got to do research. It's pretty easy to know that Buffalo residents' preferred beer is Labatt Blue and not Genesee.
Yeah, I mean, again, broad generalizations and characterizations are stupid, right?
Right.
We can all agree on that. But if your movie's going to hinge on that, right? Say I'm going to make the broadest comedy or satire about British people, they're gonna fucking look like Austin Powers. They're gonna have bad teeth and fucking, you know, the union, wearing the Union Jack. It would be like if somebody made that movie and was like, well, they're British, so they wear silly hats. It's like, that's not a stereotype. What are you talking about? That's pretty much like watching this Buffalo movie. It's like, they have a lot of reoccurring Buffalo stereotypes that don't make sense for the city. It's just, it's not accurate.
If it's supposed to be a love letter, it's definitely not.
I don't think it's supposed to be.
Yeah, I think it's making fun of Buffalo in a big way, which is unfair being a resident here, but also just being a moviegoer. And like, if I had seen anything and recognized it in any other movie, I'd be just as like on that screenwriter for being like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, again, it doesn't... I mentioned the Smart Park ad, the Super Bowl Smart Park ad, but even that felt like it came from a place of love. Like, it felt endearing. Like, all those actors who were doing that ad, they all are from Boston. So they're all kind of, like, making fun of themselves as much as they're making fun of the city. So there is kind of, like, a warmth to it. that's not in this movie.
No.
It's kind of just like, this is this place I used to live. Thank fuck I got out. And that's like the kind of condescending tone you get in it. And yeah, I know you. If you're not from Buffalo, you probably listen to two guys from Buffalo talk way too much about how accurate it is to Buffalo. But just know also it's a shitty Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah, it's a shitty Wolf of Wall Street. It's called Buffaloed. They made a point to name it after this city.
Yeah.
So they deserve that.
So definitely do not watch Buffaloed. Skip it all together. I can't find anything to recommend about this movie. Go if you like Zoe Deutsch, go watch her in anything she's better in. Zombieland 2, not a good movie, but better than this shit. We are going to talk about two movies which are hopefully a lot better next week.
I mean, I don't know, man.
Wait and see. One is... Oh, God, are we really doing this?
We're going to go see Call of the Wild starring Harrison Ford and a CGI dog.
I will just say, I wish we could watch a whole movie that was without the CGI dog.
There should be... It's going to be Beethoven.
I'm just saying...
Large-scale Beethoven.
Watching like, the behind-the-scenes footage of just Harrison Ford acting alongside a tennis ball would be incredible. Like, that would be great. I would watch that movie.
A documentary of the making of Call of the Wild. Also, we're going to watch a Survivor horror film... I would say, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a psychological horror movie called The Lodge. Mm-hmm. And this also takes place in the Arctic. And it is from, I'm not going to try to pronounce their names because it's difficult, but it comes from the same filmmakers that brought us Goodnight Mommy, which is a very fucked up movie. And we'll see if The Lodge is equally fucked up. But I think
both these movies are going to be fucked up, but for different reasons.
But I think that's it for Cynicism this week. We'll see you at the movies.
See you at the movies.